This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, Six Cities, Six Points of View, Two Wars in Eurasia, at the same time, a threat of a third war in East Asia, and always the possibility of more violence breaking out randomly in major cities as protests pour into the streets about the Middle East. Professor, a very good evening to you. Random headlines from London. Russia executing disobedient soldiers. This is from the White House. Or EU delivers only a third of 1 million artillery shells promised to Ukraine. Or Russian drones explode near Ukrainian nuclear plant. Just in case that wasn't enough, we go to the what we know about the fog of war in the Middle East. And over these last days, we've had consistent reports of Israelis raiding into Gaza. Tonight, we have a report that, according to an Israeli general, that the Hamas have been suffering major casualties without an invasion, the raids in, the raids out. I'm sure the fog of war has descended to the point that I trust no information the first three times I read it. However, I introduce two wars and six cities. We start with the city that is most definitely in the fight right now, Jerusalem. Its point of view, with the knowledge that the U.S. is backing it, but the threat from Hezbollah, the threat from Iran, and the complete alienation of much of the Ummah from Israel defending itself. Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening. I think the place to begin is to say that, speaking very broadly, we've watched for the last almost 2 years the way that the whirlpool of the Ukraine war gradually drew in more and more countries. And actually, it led to a very impressive realignment of Europe, and eventually it extended to Asia. So we saw how a war in a, it's a country bigger than France, but it's still not a global or to even a continental war, how that can alter the arrangement of international affairs. And likewise now, the Israeli conflict with right now is directed against Gaza, but it's a much larger set of issues that is going to rearrange politics and political and international structures over the next decade or so. It isn't clear where it's going to go, but we should understand that just as Ukraine has had all sorts of consequences and nobody understood at the beginning, not least because we had a faulty understanding of how the war would end. Washington believed that Ukraine would lose quickly, so we would just have to shed crocodile tears. And we didn't understand that we really had to figure out how to help the Ukrainians defeat Russia. Likewise, in the Middle East, it's clear that the Hamas vision of victory is a very strange a victory involving a kind of jihadist view and an almost apocalyptic view. But what is noticeable to me is that the Israelis, in a way that's unaccountable to me, have decided to concentrate on purifying and defeating Gaza. And there are two things that puzzle me about this. The first is that this is not the kind of war at which Israel excels. Israel is a very, very proficient military player. They have extraordinarily good equipment. They have nuclear weapons. They have submarine launch cruise missiles. They have the Iron Dome anti-missile system. They have superbly trained, deeply brave soldiers. They have a very, what other country do people struggle to get on airplanes to go back in order to defend the country. Typically, as in the American Civil War, people are moving with Mark Twain and others to, you know, to Hawaii to avoid getting into the Civil War. The Israelis are very impressive in this attack. But the kind of war that they are fighting in Gaza is one that threatens to be very, very deadly. Of course, it'll be very deadly to the Palestinians, but the Israelis do not have a lot of people, and they may well lose 1,000, 2,000 soldiers in this fighting. This is the worst, most dangerous kind of warfare. It's very soldier intensive, and it's the thing that's puzzling is that it doesn't. Suppose that you destroy Gaza completely. Suppose that we saw Gaza off and sink her into the sea. That is not going to bring peace or even security to Israel. It will simply mean that the fronts that have to be defended shift, and the grievances become even more envenomed on both sides. So there is a lack of fit, in my mind, between what you would think would be the objectives of the Israelis and the choices they're making about the type of war. I might add that if we want to think about war, we can always turn to Clausewitz, who said that war was a paradoxical trinity. Part of it, one third of it is passion, raw passion, hatred, desire for vengeance. One third of it is the effort of reason to bring that passion under control. And one third of it is the play of chance and the play of creativity, the genius of a general who can see what is the right way to win. And I think that's a very satisfactory framework. The Middle East, we're seeing a lot of passion, but we're not. I don't think we're seeing as much reason on any side as one would expect. Now, if things go on as they are, we have to remember that in Israel, Israel is a very, very politicized political country, and they have very strong political divisions. And Mr. Netanyahu is a so-called right-wing leader. He is in a precarious position. He's blamed by about 80% of the population of Israel for allowing this attack to succeed. They were clearly asleep at the switch, and one of the reasons was that he was moving soldiers into the West Bank because he's very concerned with annexing territory. He didn't pay attention to the need just to secure the country, and he's not going to be forgiven for this. But I think that he wants to carry on. So we can, but a lot of Israelis they love the country first. But they're not going to forget the grievances they feel toward this. This is the worst failure in Israeli security history. It's terrible. And they're not going to forget about this. And they want to see there are plenty of competent, able, dedicated, honest people in Israel. They want to see them be in the government. But I think what we're going to see is a prolonged political crisis or political strain in Israel, which is to be matched by a strain among Israel's allies, the European countries, the United States, and all the rest, because we are, in a sense, taking on ourselves the complex of contradictions that lie behind the Israelis whom we support. And we will not be able to finesse these any more than the Israelis will be able to. So I feel that this is going to be terrible no matter what happens, but I think that we may be making it unnecessarily bad.
At this point, Professor, there's indication from Jerusalem that this war will not be quick, that it'll be, it's now being called the long war. And that is always a risk of destabilizing the region. Do you measure that Egypt is stable enough to survive this? I know Lebanon isn't. And I'm not sure about Jordan. Syria's already crumbled. So can Egypt withstand a long conflict, weeks or months?
Well, I've been in Egypt fairly recently, but everything I know about Egypt suggests that the country is strained by all kinds of things. If you go to Cairo, it's a city which is grossly overpopulated. It is the hotels have got or they had when I went there. They have armored cars outside. They've got concrete barriers. It is not a stable or a country, and it's not a country that has much reserve. It will be drained fairly quickly, but it is a country. Israel, I mean, Egypt has a definite national identity. Egypt is as vulnerable as, or almost as vulnerable as the countries you've just mentioned. And the problem that you're describing of the gradual destabilization of everything by a protracted war is perhaps the single most important or the most dangerous issue right now.
Yes, the wider war is what is feared in Cairo, which is why al-Sisi called a gathering of the Mediterranean basin Saturday a week past. It did not resolve the conflict. It will remain a vulnerability. We're moving to Moscow now. This is Six Capitals, Six Points of View with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.